Hi, everyone. I've got a special guest here today. I have Alderman Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward of the City of Chicago. We are about to go over the state of affairs of Chicago and hopefully the state of Illinois and see what the heck is going on. But first, let's find out where Raymond Lopez came from. Where were you born?
So, good morning. Thank you for having me. First and foremost, good morning.
That sounded a little too official,
didn't it? Man, it sounded great. Definitely had your coffee this morning. But I'm Raymond Lopez, Alderman of the 15th Ward. I'm resident of the Southwest Side, representing Chicago Lawn, Brighton Park, Back of the Yards, Canaryville, Gage Park, and West Englewood. But a Southwest Side kid through and through, grew up by Midway Airport, went to Catholic school down there, St. Camilla's, St. Lawrence.
You went to St. Lawrence?
I did.
I went to Gordon.
Okay. And on that note, we are done.
We're done. We're gone.
This is the fastest podcast I've done in my life. Well, at least you didn't say De La Salle.
I'll agree with you then.
But no, family's been part of the Chicago fabric for almost 100 years. When my great grandfather first came here, my dad, grandfather, and great grandfather all were Army veterans like yourself, having served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam. So just very much a Chicago kid, talk like it. You could hear it when I started talking about hot dogs and beers.
Yeah.
But you know, and now Alderman in my third term, 10 years this May.
And you know what's so funny is because you're on the South Side, you've never come to the North Side to live at all, have you?
I think I've brought my passport up here twice. It's been punched at, I think today at Diversey, and then I think once before at Belmont.
Isn't that funny? Like if you were born on the South Side, you always stay a Southsider. You never come north. And the same thing for me. I've been a Northside kid, grew up in Logan Square, went to Catholic school on the north side, St. John Birchman School, Gordon Tech. And I never wanted to live, don't want to live on the south side of Chicago, Cubs fan.
Well, see, there again, you're really tempting us because, you know, White Sox fan, we're on a winning streak.
Cubs too. Cubs won yesterday too.
Well, you know, but they had two losses in Tokyo. So,
well, we're not going to talk about that. Okay, that's something else. We'll go from there. So, you went to high school, St. Lawrence, and I apologize for that. And then you went to college.
Attended UIC, left before graduating to go work for Mayor Daley at the time in his Office of Special Events, because I was going to school for political science, and I could either learn about it in a book or learn about it from the master himself. So I decided to take a job there, spent a few years in that office, left, ended up working for Southwest Airlines, a great airline, for roughly 13 years. Met my husband, bought a house, and then got back involved with politics again.
Why?
Why?
especially Chicago politics. I mean,
So I had been involved politically when I was younger, when I was in college, helping out and doing stuff. But when I was at Southwest Airlines, I really didn't have any ambition to get back into politics until I became a homeowner.
Oh.
Until I bought my first house and reached out to my alderman at that time and was treated so badly that I said, somebody needs to run against that person because this person is god awful. Hung up on me, their staff was rude. And I'm sure any one of your listeners or viewers knows exactly what kind of behavior I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And it was all over a garbage can, believe it or not. So I spent a year trying to convince my neighbor someone should run against that person. And they finally said, you should run against that person. Since I'd been doing so well organizing everyone else, right, you know, maybe it should be you. So I did. I ran for alderman in 2011, wasn't successful. But I did better than most people thought, considering I lived in a supermajority black ward, and here I was, this gay Latino running on the South Side for alderman. Definitely not the norm, but definitely threw a wrench into the politics of the region, stayed at it, became elected Democratic committeeman less than a year later in 2012, alderman in 2015, and here we are today still fighting the good fight for the city of Chicago.
Well, it's funny because I've thought about it, and I've only thought about it, like whether I would want to get into it, because I've never, and don't take offense to this, I mean, you've been born and raised in Chicago. We know that the corruption and all the crap that everybody's stealing, fraud, aldermen going to jail, governors going to prison. To me, it's always been, you know, it's crooked county, Chicago's crooked, everybody's corrupt. And it's like, did I ever really want to get into the backstabbing and all the crap that goes on with politics, and then the dirt that gets thrown And I don't know if I've got tough enough skin. You do, obviously. I don't know if I do. For all the criticism and all of the backlash that you're going to get on certain things. And it's like, do I really even would want to get involved in it? And now that I'm actually like really kind of getting into politics, because even growing up and living here in the city, it was all just background noise.
Yeah.
I never really followed a lot of the politics and anything like that until probably just the last 6 or 8 years. I started like dabbling a little bit more, finding out more information, getting more into like what's really happening. And then these last year and a half, I really started diving in, like, what the hell's going on? Like, why is all this shit like turning this way, that way? Everybody's hating everybody and jumping down everybody's throats and keying cars now and all this kind of stupid shit that's going on. I'm like,
you mean what? My Tesla's not safe outside in Logan Square?
Probably about as safe as it on the south side. I don't know.
We don't have that much purple hair down south, so it's all right.
Yeah, here we go. So it's just, yeah, I just never thought about dabbling it in. So, I mean, what was that draw besides all the experience with the alderman? I mean, how was that experience of actually going through it? And was there a lot of backstabbing and calling you out and digging into your background and going, you know, finding out the dirty little secrets that you may have hiding and all that kind of crap? That's what scares me about politics, especially when you see what's been going on.
Well, I think the short answer to that question is yes, yes, and yes. Because entrenched, established political dynasties and organizations are going to do whatever they can to stay in power, because power is never given, it's taken. And you take it by winning and beating them at their own game. And that's really what we were able to do, despite having all of the so-called progressives who would have, you would think, naturally loved a candidate like me, were so out to get me when I ran. Establishment candidates who I grew up with were trying to have their own guy in place. And I've always been the one that no one really knows how to control, because you can't control me, because I'm only here because I actually just love helping people.
Yeah,
I got in politics and learned very quickly that when people vote, elected officials listen and deliver for the neighborhoods. And that's a message that's sorely lacking in many communities, particularly African American and Latino communities, who don't necessarily see or understand that correlation. White folks get it. Our folks, not so much.
Yeah.
And they've forgotten that. So trying to re-educate people on what civics can do for your community, all above board. But, you know, but again, if you're not engaged, if you're not voting, you're not getting.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that we have to teach communities again. And I've been doing that my entire career now. Yes, there are plenty of examples of trying to dig up dirt, trying to dig up whatever little edge the opposition thinks they can get on you. And I know I've been a victim of that and on the receiving end of that. And I also know that I've had to use that to defend myself, too, because... Right. You know, if a bully swings at you,
you gotta take a swing back.
You have to swing back.
Yeah.
And that's just par for the course. And there's a way to do it tastefully and tactfully. And then that what we see from like some of the more aggressive left unions and organizations is that they take it to the extreme and often overplay their hands, much to their candidate or to their agenda's detriment.
Yeah. So you're better at that than I would, because I think my aggression, I would get angry. And I don't know if I would, you know, they always say the power of the pen is the best way to fight somebody back or whatever. But I think for me, just the way I grew up, it would be like, I'm going to knock you out. if I see you on the street, you're getting knocked out.
Trust me, there have been plenty of times where both my husband and I have seen some of the people who claim to be champions of our community who have done some of the worst whisper campaigns against us or social media campaigns against us. And I have to put on the smiling face.
Yeah.
But thankfully my husband can give him the middle finger with both hands and tell him to go take a long walk off a short pier.
Right.
When no one, cause they're not looking at him. They're looking at me.
Right.
So
we were talking earlier that you were on the podcast for Flip Chicago Red. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how, I didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast. I didn't know you were on there. They are actually trying to flip it to Republican. We've always, the state, the city has always been Democrat. So how did you guys, or how did that go about with that conversation with them that they're trying to flip this Republican, which I'm not against it. I think this government, the way things are now, and we're going to definitely dive into this because I know Brandon Johnson is got a 6% approval rating now.
And probably watching
less,
today.
If maybe
and he'll
less.
Be watching this podcast when he finds out I'm on it, so I'm sure.
And
and probably less than there, yeah.
It may be less by now. How do you get them to come onto your side if you decided, let's say, to run in 2027?
Well, I think what's first and foremost important is to know that Chicago, the county in Illinois, are more purple like your shirt than they are blue like people think they are. Chicago, the county, the state have all benefited from the fact that the Republican Party does not have a functional field operation that can field candidates, let alone win elections. So Democrats win by default. But if you look at this last presidential election, Donald Trump, without trying, got nearly 40% of the vote.
Yeah.
Without trying, without spending dollar one, and without having a field team getting the message, getting voters out. That's just naturally what occurs when you have someone that resonates with the Republican message. So that really should give Democrats pause and know that if the Republicans ever got their crap together, elections would get very competitive very quickly, simply because right now there's no other game in town. Now, with Flip Chicago Red, you know, we've seen those ladies coming down to city council talking. They've been on Fox News. We've been on news shows together. They showed up at a fundraiser event last night of mine. I don't mind talking with the opposition. And to be perfectly honest, I don't have to agree with people to have a conversation with them. Right. I don't know where this mindset has gotten hold in our public discourse that if you disagree with me, I want nothing to do with you. That's really a very bad position for leaders and for politics and for public policy to take. And oftentimes that's exactly where we see our political leaders, media, and everyone else trying to keep everyone boxed in separate corners as if we're in a boxing ring without ever ringing the bell. At some point, you have to ring the bell. You have to get to engage your part, your opposition. And one of you has to either win or you have to learn how to amend and work together. Right. Compromise, that word. And I think that when I did their podcast, you know, we were discussing all kinds of things related to Chicago government. We were talking a lot of things regarding immigration and the asylum seekers that are here and lack of investment in the Black community, despite having a, you know, Black mayor and half the city departments being run by African Americans.
Right.
There's a lot of things that people want to talk about. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it too, but you can't just write people, shows, or opportunities off simply because they might be of the different political or ideological stance in yourself, because that accomplishes nothing
right.
other than stagnation.
Right. So my question since we're going to go into that, what do you see as far as what's been going on and the whole sanctuary city part? I don't get as to why we're a sanctuary city to begin with. I've never understood it, why we had to put a mandate out and write a law saying that we're a sanctuary city, because I'd honestly like to see what is the benefit. I mean, we've already spent, and you brought this up on X and one of your feeds. And Brandon Johnson lied about it to Congress, and we're going to get into that too. We spent $600 million on illegal immigrants who shouldn't even be here. My mom had to come here the right way. Your mom had to come here the right way if she wasn't born here. Was she born here or was she from?
I'm three generations in, but my great grandfather came here without papers. So I have a special place in my heart for that.
Okay, so I'm first generation, and all of my cousins and my sister were all first generation. My mom, my uncles, everybody came from Mexico. My grandfather came here first the right way, got his papers, paid for it. And this was back in the late 1940s or 50s when he came. Then he brought my mom over, my sister. My mom came here, I think, when she was 12 or 14, but they came legally with the papers. So the whole sanctuary city just kind of like blows my mind that we have so much crime going on. The south side of Chicago, the west side of Chicago is a dumping ground. And that's one of the reasons why I'm sure everybody's pissed off as to why all this money is being spent on people that shouldn't be here. And that's just $600 million that he took from the COVID fund that should have been going to us, the city, and dropping maybe our property taxes for doing something, putting more police officers out. But instead, he's feeding into this sanctuary city. We're proud to be sanctuary city, and we're proud to have all these people here. But yet, none of that money went to the real citizens that actually are supposed to be here, that are legal to be here, that were born here. And they went to the wayside, and these guys are getting $9,000 a month. Houses, health care, food stamps. I mean, they got more than people that are poor here, and they're living richer by coming here for free illegally than the people who actually live here and are trying to get subsidies and can't get them.
So I think that there's a couple things that you have to differentiate in this conversation, and that when we look at the context of what we're talking about right now, you have long-term undocumented individuals who may have been here for 10, 20, 30 years. And then you have the migrant asylum seekers who came here by the millions under the last 4 years under the Biden-Harris administration. Two totally different groups, two totally different outcomes, two totally different sets of protections. When it comes to Sanctuary City, that started in the 80s mm-hmm. by Harold Washington. And what that was, prior to Ronald Reagan's amnesty, which was granted in, I believe, signed in 1986 or 87, the city of Chicago under Harold Washington issued an order saying that if you were here without papers, if you were a non-citizen, undocumented, that the city of Chicago was not going to deny you benefits or hold, or work with ICE if you asked us for any help as a city for whatever you needed, whether it was for school, whether you have jobs, housing, whatever. If you had an issue with this and were interacting with the city of Chicago, you could come forward and ask and get the help that you were looking for, the services that you needed, without fear of us letting immigration know.
Okay.
INS at that time. Immigration.
Yeah.
And that has evolved from an order to a law. And for nearly 30 years, it basically said that, except if you were engaging in criminal behavior or activity, then our police would let immigration know, and then we'd leave it up to them what they wanted to do with you. Then Lori Lightfoot comes into office and says, no, if you are a non-citizen, regardless what you do here, we will never, never let the federal government know about you. You could be a murderer. You could be a rapist. You could be a child sexual predator. You could be selling drugs, pimping women, men, boys, girls, whatever. We're still going to be a sanctuary for you. I oppose that, as did a number of my colleagues. We were called racist and xenophobic, even though I'm married to a migrant or an immigrant, excuse me. But yet we believe that you could be welcoming, but be welcoming to the right people. Immigration is a federal failure, and it has been ever since amnesty was granted, because both parties, Republican and Democrat, have used it to their advantage for their political purposes, kicking the can, avoiding responsibility, accountability, and enforcement. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, they all did it. They did it for the businesses so that they could get cheap labor. They did it for the people so that they could have new programs that they had to take care of people for, going on for decades. Now we're at a situation where Donald Trump comes in, Trump 1.0, says we're going to start cracking the whip, start booting people out who don't belong here, who shouldn't be here, or who came here by some other means. Fine. Loses. Biden opens up the gates, turns the blind eye, and goes back to vacationing for 450 days.
It's been a mess. Yeah.
So now here we are, Trump 2.0, saying, if you came here and manipulated our process, we're coming for you and you're going to be thrown out of this country. To be clear, asylum is a legal avenue to gain entry into this country. But asylum is based on very specific criteria to get into this country, none of which is, I need a job.
Right.
And that's what almost 10 million people put on their applications. There's no work for me in Venezuela or wherever. I'm coming here because I need a job. Well, if we had fast merit hearings, most of them would have been deported out,
right?
Kicked out of the country. What Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did was say, well, your court case, your hearing case is in 8 years.
Yeah. Come back to court in
8 years and we'll see. And they also did that not only because we know they'll never come back, but they also know that the Supreme Court also said you can't separate families if they have children that are born here. Now, you mean to tell me none of those 20 million people are going to be getting it on in the next 8 years making babies?
Right. Right.
So by default, you're giving them a right citizenship and a right to be here and protections. But I do think that the growing anger that we see from Chicago Red and from many communities about not just that $600 million that was spent on 59,000 Venezuelans and others last year, and the $2 billion that we've spent since 2022, is that Chicagoans are very generous and gracious people. Love that about our city. But they are only as generous as you are in their own neighborhoods first. They firmly believe that charity must start at home, and it's hard for anybody to justify spending on all these new arrivals when you have, for example, on the west side of the city of Chicago, July 3rd, 2023, if I'm not mistaken, you had a supercell storm flood the entire West Side. Thousands of homes obliterated with flooding in the basement. You had water tanks, appliances, furnaces all shot. We couldn't find $1, one damn dollar to help those people. But we found $60 million to piss away on 38th in California to put 1,800 migrants on a toxic brownfield. Yeah. That's what people get mad about. That's what people get angry about, and rightfully so, because take care of your Chicagoans first, and then if we got extra afterward, yeah, go help whoever you want to help.
Yeah.
But Chicagoans always should be first.
100%. And I think, like, going back to what you're saying, I think it started with Lightfoot. Like, she completely flipped the city into a horrible, horrible situation. Downtown is like, I mean, I, for the first time, probably in a little bit, I've gone downtown. There's so many for sale lease signs, for sale, lease, big businesses that we used to just flourish, the downtown Christmas lights in the winter. There's nothing, I mean, compared to anything when I was growing up or when you were growing up. I love going downtown area for Christmas time and seeing all the different businesses in the window. Now it's like a ghost town.
Yeah. Too bad Halloween wasn't 12 months out of the year, because we'd have a Spirit Halloween store.
All the up and down. we'd be the Halloween, you know, capital of the country, you know. But it's ridiculous. And I think COVID, I think, is really what turned a lot of, like, where the crime and the police department and...
I'm not going to let her off the hook on that one, because COVID provided its own challenges and the whole country had to deal with COVID. But when you look at what happened with the murder of George Floyd, and she welcomed people to come here for righteous protest.
Yeah.
That is what destroyed this city.
Yeah.
Because she opened the doors, opened the gates of Chicago, said, come on down if you're upset about what happened in Minneapolis. And as we were telling her that people are organizing paid protesters to come here to destroy our city, that's when she thought we were all full of it. That's when she and I had our famous F-bomb back and forth.
Yeah.
Because she did not believe or want to believe the intelligence that we had all been given, that we had box trucks from Indiana, Wisconsin, and Iowa all headed straight for Chicago.
Right.
Told us we were all full of it. And then we all know what happened then.
Yeah, because, I mean, we were seeing it on the news. We were seeing people flood out of box trucks and everything else. Yeah. And then the whole...
And it was very organized, by the way.
Yeah.
Because people were being left behind, terrified, because I know we caught one, and he had his walkie-talkie. He's like, I don't know. I was just supposed to be here, break windows, and then get back in the truck. I don't know where are we supposed to meet up after this? I'm like, well, I know where you're going. Don't worry about where they're going. I know where you're going, because I caught your ass. Well, sorry.
No, hey, it's a podcast. We can say what we want.
Oh, don't give me that authority.
It's game on.
I am a Catholic school kid, after all.
Me too. Yeah, you know what? It became a shit show, is really what it became. And then watching, you know, what happened down at the fountain too, where these kids and everybody were throwing these water bottles and frozen water bottles and at these police officers. And then it was almost like they were being villainized.
Yep.
And God forbid you touch anybody. You can't touch them. What do you mean you can't touch them? They're throwing and they're physically hurting our police officers.
And now we're paying out to those kids.
$280,000 to a lady who broke her tooth, who was throwing shit probably, and got caught up in the melee. I don't know if she was, and I shouldn't speak this because maybe you probably know better. I don't know how she got arrested or why she got arrested or how she got a broken tooth. But at the end of the day, if you're a shithead that you were there, then you deserve what you got. You can't go there expecting to walk out as a princess like, oh, I didn't know they were throwing water bottles. I didn't know they were throwing frozen and sticks and everything else they were throwing.
And that's the narrative that our law department is selling city council now to all these protesters and antagonists from that day, from the Columbus Day statue and from the other civil unrest that happened in August, that, oh, they were just victims of circumstance in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, there was one lawsuit where a family was going to the Brickyard, lived 4 miles from there, and decided in the middle of the civil unrest that now was the perfect time to go buy Pampers at Target. Three Targets from their neighborhood. Now, you could go shopping wherever you want, but we all remember that day.
Yeah.
That day is burned in my head like 9/11, because that was the attack on my city. And you can't tell me that you didn't know, and you and a carload of your friends and neighbors and cousins thought it was a great idea to go for a pack of Pampers.
Yeah.
At 3 p.m. on May 30th, 2020. You can't tell me that when you have 200 people converging on 15 officers at the Columbus statue, with frozen water bottles, with umbrellas, with sharpened PVC tubes, that all that just randomly happened, and that you just randomly showed up to take pictures because you thought it was going to be a great for historical reference. No, I'm not buying it. And most people don't buy it. But sadly, last mayor, this mayor are all making quick write-outs of those checks.
And I don't understand how in the world, I mean, we don't have money to be dishing out like that, for one. And then two, what was it, last year that we dished out $75 million in lawsuits from the police department in stupid like lawsuits kind of like this? And the year previous
more. I think it's, we budget for $150 million in lawsuits every year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
And I know we blow through that every year.
That's absolutely asinine. And it's ridiculous as to why we even have a fund like that.
Well, we have a cottage industry that, as we just saw this week, the mayor's getting kickbacks from, or donations.
Their attorney, just saw that. And isn't he the one who represented this lady for the $208,000?
Yep.
And now we're seeing that that's all he does, is every lawsuit is against the
city. There are many practices that just solely focus on farming out clients from CPD harassment cases, from false arrest, and they will do all the work because they know they want to get paid. And unfortunately, what we're seeing now is that, thankfully, I think we're at the end of that rope. The Burge and some of the other cases, we are down to the last 200.
Oh my God.
But what we're seeing now is, as that well dries up, those lawyers are now pivoting to the next cash crop, which is city service. So now, you tripped on the sidewalk, oh, the city should have fixed it, $75,000. Oh, that tree limb hit you in the head because it was a 50-mile-an-hour wind.
Yeah.
We just paid $250,000 to somebody who a frozen tree branch broke. And since we were at that tree 5 months previously trimming it during the summer, come January, we're at fault because it cracked because it was frozen and windy that day.
You know, so here's the question, because I know I've heard this before too, and I'm sure you obviously have heard it too, is that it's cheaper to cut a check than to go to trial on something.
That is what they say, but I think that is incorrect in the long term, because once you start settling for the first, now you're settling for everything.
And look what we just did.
And now that pattern is continuing and building upon itself, where if you at least set the bar and said no and pushed back, what you're really fighting is precedent. And that's a legal term, which I'm sure you and your viewers are familiar with, is once you start something, you have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And we have now set the precedent where, for example, all these wonderful bike lanes, that if your bike lane is marked and dirty and you hurt yourself, you could sue now because we've paid a settlement on that. Now, we've put up millions of dollars in bike lane apparatus structures throughout the city of Chicago. Division has plenty of them. Milwaukee has plenty of them. Archer Avenue has plenty of them. Halsted straight up and down. Western straight up and down. So if you're on a marked, identified bike lane,
right,
and something happens to you in there and it's not clean or cracked or something, now you have grounds to sue because past precedent has shown that we settle those cases.
But that's going
to
be a mess already, because didn't Brandon Johnson stop the street cleaning and we got all those leaves? And I just saw something on the news that they were talking about all the dirt and leaves that haven't been picked up since the fall because he shut down or stopped the street cleaning and everything else. So that right there is going to cause lawsuits because nothing got cleaned.
Yep.
And bike lanes now especially are about to start popping off because it's getting warm out.
Mm-hmm.
That's asinine. Wow.
The city that works backwards.
Yeah, that is that. Yeah, that just doesn't. Oh, wow. So, I mean, we can keep going on forever, but I do want to touch on this. I want to touch on your opinion of what should happen to the mayors that went in front of the Senate committee as far as them lying and going against federal law. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I have to say that was the dullest 6 hours of live TV
I ever saw. I watched the whole thing, too. I sat there. I'm like, all right, this is going to get good. They're going to get him. I was like, come on.
You know what? What I think would have made that testimony better is if they would have had the four mayors and then the four mayors' most vocal critics right there next to them.
Oh, that would be, yeah.
Could you have imagined like me and Brandon Johnson sitting right next to each other? And him blathering on about,
nothing.
Well, you know, I'm a son of a black preacher and blah, blah, blah.
And we're here for the black children and the black children. And we need reparations for the black children. Okay.
But
Shut up.
Or when he lied, or like when he lied to Congress and they didn't know it. Because I know he wasn't a math teacher, but I also know $600 million is not 1% of our budget.
Right.
Or when he said that we don't harbor criminals in the city of Chicago, ask any law enforcement official what they think of that.
Oh, he's full of crap.
So I know that there are multiple times that he not lied. Just mischaracterized things. He lied.
He lied.
He flat out lied. And I heard a couple members of the committee say that they were going to draft some articles, hopefully holding them in contempt.
One did.
I think two did. I think there
was a two. I know the one girl, and I can't remember her name. She said that she had him at the end. You saw
who, there was somebody before her.
Oh, was it also? I might have missed that.
But I think it was all for all of them again. But
what's going to come of that?
But nothing happens unless they do something.
Right, exactly.
And all of that great theater for themselves, bashing and making fun of him. So what? Unless something happens. But what can happen, aside from hopefully them getting thrown in jail by Pam Bondi, is the very real possibility, as we're starting to see now, both at the state and the city level, is that federal money that comes to the city of Chicago that offsets Chicago taxpayers having to pay for certain things can start to dry up, can start to disappear. And while they may not be able to impact funds already appropriated by Congress under the Biden-Harris administration, they absolutely could can put the kibosh on anything under Trump 2.0 moving forward.
Yeah.
And to put things in perspective, in the city of Chicago, our budget is $17.3 billion. $4.5 billion of that 17 spent is from federal dollars. So if those grants disappeared, overwhelmingly, whether they are direct or passed through the state to us, they still originate from Washington, D.C. And if those dollars were to disappear, what you would see would be several hundred million dollars disappear from the police department.
Right.
Technology, vests, cameras, counterterrorism, a lot of stuff like that. And none of this is secret, so you don't have to worry. I'm not spilling the beans on anything.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But you'd also see like the Department of Public Health completely disappear overnight. So everything that takes care of like vaccinations, that takes care of our seniors with some of the food programs, things of that nature, HIV, STI testing, things like that, gone like that.
Right.
And if you wanted to keep that, you would literally have to triple Chicago's property taxes to cover the lost revenue from the federal government.
Or find it from other ways like he's already doing now. I mean, we're the highest tax, I think, in the country.
So
next to California,
once that disappears and once you keep poking that Trump bear because you don't want to give up the 2% of the non-citizen population that are serious, dangerous threats to our city and to our country, you're going to have some seriously fucked up things to have to decisions to have to come up with.
And that's what they're both doing, Pritzker and Johnson. They just don't know how to shut the fuck up. And like, why are you poking the bear? Why are you out? Especially Pritzker. I get it. I mean, he's trying to run for president. He actually thinks he might win. I don't know where he's getting that idea. But
well, they're both doing the progressive playbook, which is rather than focus on what you have direct control over, you're going to continuously try to find a new enemy to be fighting against. All the while hoping everyone forgets that all the problems that you're fighting them against, you created yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Chicago, our financial issues are created in part because one, fiscal mismanagement by some of my aldermanic colleagues who support the mayor and the mayor himself. This war with the federal government, you allowed Joe Biden to send these individuals here. Yeah, well, it's easy to point at Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis because, they got the ball rolling.
Right.
But Colorado's a Democratic state. They sent people here. New York is a Democratic state. They sent people here. I don't hear them screaming about Hochul over there. And all these problems that became our problems, they gladly took on because they thought that there's no way Trump was going to win, that Harris was going to come back with
tons of money, yep,
ARPA 3.0, but none of that happened. And now they're stuck. And all they can do now is point the finger and try to continuously make Donald Trump the boogeyman. And let's be clear. Donald Trump has enough problems. He does a lot of dumb stuff and earns a lot of criticism. But there are things that he is willing to talk to people about. Tom Homan willing to talk to people about.
Right.
Case in point, he and I met. we discussed. He would gladly have talked to members of city council about how we can coordinate and work together, but nobody wants to have that opportunity. And now we find ourselves in this perpetual state of I'm fighting. And you need me here to keep fighting. I don't need you here. I need you to fix it. I don't need you to fight it. I need you to fix it. And I think that's where a lot of voters are at right now, is that, you know, they are suffering from nonstop political fatigue. They are suffering from an inability of government in the state, the county, or the city to actually fix things and do things. And when you look at turnout, when you look at candidates, and when you look at where we're at, you know, because people are getting so frustrated, for about the past several years, turnout has lulled. But I think we're seeing now is an electorate that is paying more attention, is getting more vocal, speaking to their networks and growing from there, and really looking to follow in what they see with like Elon Musk and Doge, which is they want to take back their governments. Mm-hmm. They want to take back their city, their county, their state, and bring it back to the middle with some common sense, because everything is not meant to be warfare material.
Right.
Some things are just right is right, wrong is wrong. Go from there. Mm-hmm. And then you could weed out some of the controversial stuff as you go. But right now, every politician out there is not trying to fix anything. They're just trying to maintain that battle
mentality. Yeah. It's, you know, I just wonder how hard is it going to be to try to change to, let's say, bring in, I don't want to say bring in, but I guess start a Doge in the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois. I mean, I just read something the other day that says that we hire more state employees in Illinois than any other job that's out there privatized. Like, we have 14,000 more employees working for the state than what gets employed privately.
And the question too is not just, excuse me, how many people are we employing, but what work are they doing? Where are they doing it?
Exactly. And it's not easy to get a job.
No.
I tried getting a job with the city, and it's not easy to try to get a job unless you know somebody, it seems.
And now you get to work from home, which is the greatest con job that there is right now. Yeah. At the city's county and state. You could work for us. All you have to do is, you know, 30 hours or 25 hours in the building and 15 hours at home. And I don't know about you or your listeners or viewers, but I know every time I've tried to find someone who's supposedly working from home, the answer I get is, oh, you have to wait till I get in the office.
Yeah.
Well, then get your ass back in the office.
Right.
Come back to work. Everyone else can do it. I told the budget team this last budget cycle at City Hall that if people want one day at home, then let's cut their pay by 20%.
That's, yeah.
Take it as a day off. You want a 4-day week? Fine.
Right.
Because I know you're not working on that fifth day anyway. Right. Can't find you. You have away messages on your emails and voicemails. So, fine, 20% cut.
Right,
painless. Enjoy your 3-day weekends.
Yeah, I agree.
God forbid.
So the next huge debacle, which I don't understand how, I personally think CTU.
Man, I might need to double. We might have to switch to the bar over there. Holy cow!
Get some bourbon. But you know what? It is so aggravating and just. And this has been for years. The CTU chokehold that they have on this city, you don't get voted in, you don't become a politician, you don't become mayor, you don't become governor without CTU, the unions, and black minorities to vote you in. Otherwise, you ain't getting in anywhere. That's just what it is. And
well, I think I'm living proof of that. It's not true, but go ahead.
But, okay, you're one of, like, not the norm. Okay. To be mayor,
100%,
to be governor, you have to have the unions on your side or you're done.
Well, union, and, yes, but I think that when you look at
the minority
CTU,
the black vote.
I think what you see in particular when it comes to like the CTU is that there has to be leadership with a balance, right? You need someone who can balance both union needs as well as taxpayer needs. At the fiscal responsibility as well, along with the workforce accountability, go hand in hand. And there's a way to balance that. But what we have seen is two weak mayors back to back, so totally dependent on those unions and that union in particular that they're willing to bet the farm and for them.
Yeah. Well, Johnson, I actually believe is like a pawn. from the union to begin with. And somehow he just got voted in by lying, saying that he would never raise property taxes. And everybody bought that bullshit.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why he won, notwithstanding what he was saying. It was also what his opponent wasn't doing. But yes, Johnson is a puppet of the CTU. But the irony of all of that is, here's CTU's guy. You're in charge of City Hall. You're in charge of the Board of Ed. And you still can't land the plane on that contract? How bad of a leader are you when you're the guy in charge of both universes?
Yeah.
And you can't get the job done for your own people?
And now what are we going to do with that $175 million? Where's that going to come from?
Well, it's actually $350 because that $175 million was for
24.
And we paid it in 2025 too. So, you know, he's just going to keep rolling it on, repackaging it, and kicking the can further down so that hopefully everyone forgets about it. Because by the time the real bills start coming due, we'll be tapped out of money. We'll be, our line of credit will be completely exhausted, and he will be packed up and out of the building.
Collecting his $3 million pension or whatever he's got going. Yeah. I just don't understand, because I know you guys, because you just had some 18 aldermen, I think, mm-hmm. I just saw, sign on to try to figure out how and where we're going to get this money from. Where's your idea of right now, as it sits, to come up with this? And why is CTU not giving us and giving us the money for the $175 million they owe us? And why are we not getting them to do the audit that they're supposed to have done already and haven't done it yet?
Well, I think first off, their union audit is a question for the state, which monitors that kind of activity. So maybe Kwame Raoul, who's watching, should maybe audit the CTU.
Is he around?
Or take them to court and do something. Take a break from filing lawsuits against Trump and focus on what's going on here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
Two, we pay because the state law says we have to pay, because that was a trade-off that Rahm Emanuel did, I believe, to kind of give like a backdoor pay increase without actually giving teachers, the non-teachers employee, non-CTU employees of CPS a raise, saying that they didn't have to make their own pension payments, that we would do it for them rather than give them a raise. Sure, that sounds nice, but you know what? Now that we're moving towards an independently elected board, independent CPS, you want to handle your bills? Fine. Then you handle your pension payments too. Only seems fair. Only seems right. Mayor Johnson said, don't worry, we have an agreement. They're going to pay the next 2 years as we work to untangle ourselves from them. Okay, fine. Let's have it. You have an elected board. They told us, go scratch. Okay, it's fine. I believe, as do many of my colleagues, that we're not going to see that money or this year's money. Fine, we'll figure it out. But at the same time, when CPS comes hat in hand for money from TIF to come to fix the infrastructure in their schools or parking lots or whatever, I know what my answer is going to be to them too.
Yeah.
Do you don't want to pay your bills to me? I have no reason to give you money for anything. I'll put that back on fixing streets, curbs, and doing the other things in the neighborhoods outside of the schools. You want to be independent? Go enjoy independence.
Why would
I think at the end though, the real problem that the city of Chicago is going to have is that we have a spending problem. Even in this last budget, as the mayor was trying to put up $300 million in new property taxes on taxpayers for this year, and we successfully fought that. I killed it in less than 8 minutes.
No, it was awesome. It was awesome to see that whole thing.
The fact is that we spend way too much. We have actually been spending at a deficit every year I've been in office, and that's something that I told Rahm I didn't support, Lori, and Johnson, that we have to live within our means. You only get so much money coming into your checking account every month. You have to live within it. I only get so much coming into mine. And I tell my husband, we have to live. It doesn't always work, but you know, got to do what you got to do.
Right.
But you cannot borrow hundreds of millions of dollars every year to cover your overspending to avoid property taxes or cuts and then act surprised when you run out of money. What we see now is that we actually planned for this as revenue coming in, and now it's not going to be there. So I don't think you or any of your viewers ever would buy a car on the expectation that you're going to pull a $10,000 lottery ticket every month.
Yeah, no.
But that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
So now we have to make some cuts. We had proposed in the last budget making over $600 million in cuts, bringing our spending levels to pre-pandemic, which I think is fairly reasonable.
And where were those cuts coming from? Because obviously there's across opposition all departments to it. I mean, nobody wants to make cuts. And because I got my sister's brother, sister-in-law working and doing nothing and can't cut them.
Sure, I can. They might not be like it. They might not like it, but you know.
But that's, I mean, I'm sure that's got a lot of... Someone has to... Somebody's brother, sister, whatever. Well,
I mean, true, but you know, we've gotten to a point where the city's budget has increased from $12 billion in 2019 to $17 billion less than 5 years later.
Yeah.
All of that bloat was based on federal money that came in during COVID, and you can't just shift that funding burden to taxpayers and still let people not do their jobs, not go to work, not provide services to the city of Chicago. It'd be different if the city of Chicago was spotless and no potholes, but I avoided five craters down Western Avenue trying to get here today that probably would have taken out three out of the four tires on my truck. You need to cut back on spending. You need to bring it down. And you could always go back and remove many of these salaries that we gave people, because in an effort to build support and make everyone's patronage hires happy. I mean, we have departments where they were giving people $15,000, $20,000 raises from last year to this year. That's insane. How do you go from 140 to 180 or 160? And for what?
And we don't have money.
And we don't have money. So that might have sound, that might, giving gratuitous raises might sound good to exempt non-union members who work for the city, because
right,
it buys some loyalty. But that's unsustainable. That's not realistic. And now we're at a point where, okay, now we need $175 million. That's why you saw the mayor tell the vendors, we'd like 3% back. He's telling the departments, I need 3% back. Yeah. Because all of that, they expect to generate about $170 million, which gets him in the ballpark of covering the loss of last year.
Right.
Just to avoid having to deal with this year's issue as well.
That's crazy.
So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Yeah. And both Peter and Paul have left the office already.
You know, and I've been looking at this for a while, but I'm just curious as to your thought as to why. Okay, so firemen and policemen can never go on strike. Mm-hmm. Why do we not try to put the teachers union along in that category with them, that they cannot strike? Because that's what they hold the balls to the city, is that if mm-hmm. you don't give us what we want, the kids are going to stay home and parents are going to have to figure out daycare because we're going on strike. And
I think that's a great idea. I think anyone who impacts the public as a public sector employee should not be allowed to go on strike.
100%. But then,
because
why,
if it applies for police and firemen,
right,
because they are first responders and important and valued members of our workforce,
right?
Teachers are no less important.
And that's what they say they are. They say they're
our
more
garbage important men than, are no less important.
Right.
But yet teachers have always used their influence to keep themselves exempt, just like they keep themselves exempt from being held accountable for the live outcomes of the students that they teach. I mean, where else can you proudly push for your union when one out of five kids can read, one out of four can do math, and yet you want a 5%, 10% raise every year for the next 10 years,
right,
based on nothing? I have no problem giving teachers raises. Merit-based. But these kids better know how to read.
Right.
Going back to our Catholic school days, your Catholic school teachers got paid nowhere near what a public school teacher...
Oh, half.
If they were lucky, half.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet their outcomes were 10 times better than what public schools were. Because there's a different motivation, a different mindset, and a different value system for what you produce, what the teachers produced in that classroom. Public schools can't just be a babysitting operation. You need to be able to teach the basics, and then from the basics, focus on critical thinking. Not agenda, not narrative, not indoctrination. Read, write, and comprehend, and then out the door.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I'm just, yeah, it's just always been something that, because like in the private sector, you get pay raises based on your merit, based yep. on your works, what you do and how mm-hmm. quickly you do it and how efficiently you do it. And I just don't get like how we're not already like mm-hmm. putting that into contracts, or how that hasn't already been in contracts to say, hey, you great,
well, because
you want a pay raise, but it's all gonna be merit based.
Well, because they pivot, right? They pivot and say, well, that's racist. Or they pivot. They pivot and say, "Well, it's not our fault that the kids can't read; it's the parents' fault." Well, wait a minute. You don't get to hold up a sign saying "Protect our kids" and then walk away when I say, "Well, your kids can't read." Well, they're not my kids; they're their kids.
Right.
Well, which one is it? Because if they're not your kids anymore, then I don't need you to have that much money. If you're not helping that mom or dad who's struggling,
right?
Then what value do you bring to this equation? Because you're certainly not teaching these kids. You're certainly not addressing the issues. And yeah, there's a lot of issues in some of our schools with some of our kids. No question. But you don't get to have it both ways. They're your kids when you want the money. They're someone else's kids when you're asked what the results are.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you know, and the thing that kind of even chaps my ass a little bit more is because of the fact that the fire department hasn't had a contract in 4 years, mm-hmm. and
trucks are wheels are falling off.
Yeah, and we don't have any money to buy new trucks. I mean, there should be a fund for all of that stuff, but there isn't. But yet here, the teachers union. This is what, the first year that we're going into contract with the teachers union, I think. And if I'm wrong, let me know. This is the first year of the new contract that they're trying to get.
They've been at it for about a year or so. Yeah.
Okay. 4 years versus going into a year, and we're trying to placate them and give them everything that they want, at least Johnson is, which mm-hmm. is bullshit. But yet we've got firefighters who can die on the job, hurt themselves, and they've been going for 4 years without a pay raise. Where is the justification in that? And I'm kind of confused too as to why did the fire department union now jump on board with the most hated union that I can see in the city of Chicago right now?
Yeah.
Why would they try to even come close to like trying to jump on that bandwagon with the Chicago Teachers Union?
You know, Chicago has stopped negotiating with the Firemen's Union, Local 2, for about a year. So I understand Local 2's frustration. And if they think they have an edge to try and move the needle, I guess they're going to take it. I don't personally agree with it. I, you know, aside from them all having the same color red t-shirt, I don't know why you'd want to stand with them. Because to your point, CTU is the worst perceived union in the city of Chicago, and rightfully so. They've earned their reputation.
100%.
Conversely, so has Local 2. The firefighters, Chicago's bravest, have earned their reputation. Why would you sully yourself to lift them up mm-hmm. when you know that the teachers have never once lifted a finger to help you at any point? FOP has done more to support the firefighters union to try to get a contract, but they chose a very different partner in this. And I don't understand it. I wasn't part of those conversations. I hope this calculus works out for them. I know we have tried to do things and offer to do things in city council to try and force the issue with the law department to settle. City council does not necessarily get directly involved in contract negotiations, but you know, we can in fact issue orders to departments like the law department to say, settle it now.
Right.
Especially when we know that for all intents and purposes, the Local 2 Firemen's contract is 99.9% done. We are literally arguing about one or two things between the two parties. The money's already been set aside. We could sign it tomorrow, write the back pay checks, and move on with our lives tomorrow if we wanted to.
Right.
But the city is dragging because all emphasis, like you said, from the mayor's team on down is trying to find a way to manipulate the Board of Ed to get the teacher's 10-year contract done. 10 years. Think about that. 10 years at a 9.5% pay raise every year for 10 years. That's what? Almost 100% pay increase in 10 years.
I mean, most teachers already make 100 grand.
So they want to make 200 by the time this contract ends.
And for what? I mean, there's no justification to be able to give them that kind of money when, again, like you said, four kids can read, write, I don't think math,
the justification for parents or taxpayers is insignificant as it relates to the fact that CTU went all in on Brandon Johnson, mortgaged the house, quite literally, got him elected, payments due. And they're not going to care if he's here or not. I personally think that the moment this contract gets done, he might even quit, because that's all he cares about. And you could see it in his voice. You ask him a question about the city of Chicago, anything going on, he has that glazed look over his eye, you know.
And he goes into his bullshit rhetoric of...
But the moment you ask him about CPS, he gets angry, he gets emotional, he gets charged up. I'm a teacher.
I was a teacher for 3 years, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So he wasn't elected to be the head of CPS. He was elected to be the head of city of Chicago, the mayor of the city of Chicago. Right. And anything about Chicago, water on a duck's back. CPS, it's the most animated you'll ever see him. So I think once that contract is done, don't be surprised if he's not asking for the U-Haul truck to pull up to 121 North LaSalle so we could get the hell out of there.
I'll tell you who makes me laugh though when I've been watching on X is, what's his name? William the Reporter Kelly, I think his name is.
William Kelly.
William Kelly. He cracks me up when I see him trying to interview Johnson and how they're trying to shut his mic off and won't let him do his second question. And he puts it to his face. I mean, he puts it to him. And
well, I'm just glad William Kelly's not an airline pilot, because that plane would never land. Because, you know, he's circling the head. I'm just like, you know, I the mayor, Lori, Brandon Johnson, they both deserve it coming from him, because they've treated him like crap, to be perfectly honest with you. She actually pulled his credentials.
Yeah.
Because she didn't like him.
Right.
And he was white. But you know,
but that's not racist.
But I think that, yeah, but I think that, you know, I wish he would, you know, he could be, I know what he's doing, but I wish sometimes it's like, okay, 300 words or less to get this question out. Please, William, please. But you know what, when you got the time, go for it, make the most of it.
So what was the reason that you actually had the, your donation or your, the party that you had the other day? Was that to raise funds for your next campaign or?
Well, it's to show support for our message. We had
which I love, with common sense.
I mean, all of Chicago wants common sense to come back. All of the nation wants common sense to come back. And, yeah, you know, it's sad that people think that that's a Republican term, because that's actually the most apolitical term that's out there.
Yeah.
It's the most centrist thinking that exists. You know, our fundraiser, I haven't done one in a while, but it was good to have people come together. Not only to support me, but also to see other common sense aldermen and elected officials who we all need to support. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all bitch and moan from our couch about how bad the city and governments are being run, but if people don't get off their asses and go vote, nothing will ever change. But you need to inspire people to want to come off the couch and come do that. So what we're hoping to do is build the momentum based around common sense for 2027, because I think that aside from protecting the 15 or so aldermen that fight the fight with me every day, we also need to focus not on the defensive of protecting us, but go on the offensive to get rid of some of these jackass aldermen who really have no business being in city council, who have no idea what's going on, no idea what their job is, and no plan for the future. So we want to be able to build the momentum on that. And as well, you know, we have yet to see how 2027's mayoral match is going to work, wind up, depending on what J.B. Pritzker does. Because I think there's a lot of people who are putting their name out and putting feelers out for a mayoral race. But I think that they would gladly pivot if something were to happen in Springfield as well.
I mean, from what I've heard from the ground, Pritzker's running for president, which he's already demonstrating that's pretty much what his agenda is. Then I heard Raja is going to run for governor. And I heard Mendoza is going to put her hat in for the mayor.
So I think what we're seeing right now is everyone's waiting to see what two people are going to do. Is Durbin going to stick it out to the end?
I hope not.
And run again? And is Pritzker going to run again? Now, Durbin, I think they talk about he may leave early because it's rough being in the minority again. And he's, you know, he's served his time. He's elderly, like so many in the Senate.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a rough life to always have to come back when you're in your late 70s and run, be the standard bearer on some of these committees, especially when you used to be in the majority.
Yeah.
You used to be the guy in charge. Now you're the guy fighting with the guys in charge. So that takes a lot out of you. And I give him his credit for standing up and doing what he thinks is right. But, you know, it's a never-ending battle in what, you know, is a younger demographics world right now. So we'll see what he does. Either way, you've got people lining up who want to be senator. I think Raja wants to be, Raja Krishnamoorthy wants to be senator. I think Delia Ramirez wants to be senator. I think there's a number of individuals who want to be senator. I think Alexi at one point was talking about it before he became Secretary of State. But I think that you have that universe building on its own over here. Then you have governor. We all know JB wants to be mayor, president of the United States. We know that.
Yeah.
I think it's tattooed on his underwear. But I also know that he needs to make a decision on what he's going to do before that. Because there are some serious challenges coming down the pike for the state of Illinois that I don't necessarily think that if he is still governor are going to enhance his chances to become president of the United States.
Yeah, well, we have a $1.3 billion shortfall already. You have
almost $3 billion shortfall that they have to address this season, as well as what will continue to happen moving forward with whatever cuts are coming from the federal government. And we've already seen where hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicaid cuts and things of that nature are already impacting the state. And that will only continue to grow. Excuse me. So he's going to have to make a decision. Do I stay and try to weather the bad news and hope that doesn't put too much shit on my shoes jumping into the next race?
Right.
Or does he leave? And there's been some talk of him traveling the country and trying to raise money and recruit candidates for Congress in 2026, excuse me, which is which would be the next
midterms.
That could get him some chits in the race from some districts if he wins, gets him some national name recognition if he's promoting candidates in some of these swing states or in
well, he just did that. He just put $6 million into the race in Wisconsin for the Supreme Court in Wisconsin.
Well, but he'd have to do it on a much larger scale nationwide. And, you know, he might try to help drop, you know, he could easily drop $5 million in, you know, 10 congressional races across the country that are swing districts and be impactful. So he may do that and then use that as a springboard. I'm electing Democrats to be president. But we also know that Rahm Emanuel wants to be president.
I don't think he's
and that's
got a
another
shot.
Person. Well, I wouldn't necessarily write Rahm off because, you know, I can honestly see a Gavin Newsom Rahm Emanuel ticket.
I would throw up if I saw that.
Well, get your barf bag ready because
I would throw. I mean, I think it's a joke that Bernie Sanders and AOC they're talking that possibly that they may be a ticket together.
I believe that if you look at the rhetoric, you have to watch people's words. Gavin Newsom and Rahm Emanuel are starting to sound an awful lot alike. Pritzker, not so much. I think you see, obviously, AOC and Bernie Sanders sounding and appearing. Yeah. And they're from different sides of the country. Newsom, Emanuel, different sides of the country. Maybe you'll see Pritzker and somebody else who sounds more like him from somewhere jumping in. Who knows? But I think you're going to have like-minded voices running because that seems to be where the Democratic ticket and mindset are going, where they don't want that division of thought. They want like-mindedness and uniformity in their ticket. So all that being said is we have all those wheels moving at the very top. And if Pritzker is not running for re-election, I think you're going to see someone like Alexei make the jump for governor. You might see Michael Frerichs, our state treasurer, make the jump for governor because he's from downstate. That would free up Secretary of State. So you might see Mendoza jump for that because I know that that's kind of where the speaker and some other folks were grooming her to try and move into because they would love to have seen her as Secretary of State to replace Jesse White. So all of these things are in flux and that's all going to happen before we get to 2027.
Well, because they should know by August of this year of whether they're going to run, correct?
Well,
or they should already be saying they're going to throw their hat or whatever.
Well, they'll have to start circulating petitions for whatever the Springfield offices are by Labor Day of this year. But I'm sure we're going to know before Labor Day of this year what people are running for because they're going to need that momentum to get those signatures to get on the ballot. But that will give you an idea of what the layout of the land is going to look like for the mayor's race. Because again, you've got a lot of big ticket name people, but some of those folks would very much like or to stay in Springfield, but just in a different role.
Got it. So I've got a lot of other questions that I want to go, but the main one I want to hit, and this will be the last one, I'll give you a break. The big elephant in the room, the $830 million. Where is that going and how did that get passed? That's going to basically trash us for the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Well, it's a 30-year general obligation bond debt tucked away in there, which the mayor highlighted were $77 million in projects for neighborhoods, for the wards like mine, $130 million for equipment for first responders, police stations, fire trucks, things of that nature. But then tucked off to the side was for all the other TBD crap that he's basically going to finagle and maneuver within the budget to cover his ass by the time he gets to the end of 2025.
But you guys have no say as to what he's going to do with that, correct?
No. We tried to. And all of his enablers and ass kissers were like, well, he said he's going to fix a fire truck. So of course we're going to say yes. And, you know, they were gladly just turn over the keys to the asylum, to the head maniac, simply because they don't want to have to do their job in a diligent way. The problem isn't just the $830 million, though.
It's the interest on it.
Nope. It's the fact that we just borrowed $1.25 billion for housing on top of the other $900 million that we borrowed, or $600 million that we borrowed the year before with this mayor. So we're raking in debt like it's going out of style. And the city of Chicago is now $40 billion in the hole. 40 with a capital B.
Holy shit. And who's going to... I mean, obviously, and we're supposed to be paying all that. The citizens are supposed to be paying all that off.
And well,
and that's just...
The future is paying that off. So what we saw during the Daley administration, Mayor Richard M., Daley number two, was that for 28 years, he built, he grew, and he did things, but he did it all on borrowed money because he didn't want to be the mayor that raised taxes. He sold the Skyway, sold the parking meters, but he never raised taxes. And at some point, you need to do that. Or cut spending, or adjust, or some combination therein. You can't just do all or nothing. And when I became alderman, all of those payments came due. Mm. So my very first budget, I had to vote for the largest property tax increase in history, $550 million, my first year in office. And as I said at that time, I have no choice because our bills have to get paid. But we are doing this because everything that was done while I was in grade school is now due. And we're doing it again under this administration. Now, the question is, what are you going to get for that? Are you going to get new libraries? Are you going to get new schools? Are you going to get new firehouses, police district? No, you're not going to get that. Shit's going to be piddled away, and it will be leveraged and in many cases downright stolen and grifted away to all these not-for-profits that the mayor's trying to appease. The new patronage in Chicago is not the water department worker or the electrician. It's the not-for-profit down the street that operates, gets city contracts, and then puts their workers to work on election day. That's the new patronage in Chicago, which the mayor supports.
Which that kind of, I mean, that's always been from going back to
But now they get paid to do it.
Well, yeah, they weren't because, I don't even know, do we even have precinct captains anymore? Because back in the day, there were precinct captains and they got paid to do exactly that.
Well, they'd got a job or something, but the patronage has shifted. Yeah. And now it's done with public dollars. So you take that $1.25 billion that's for housing, all of that housing money is going to be directed towards not-for-profits to administer, to build in communities. But the unspoken rule is that 15% comes right off the top as administrative costs. So 15% out of $1.25 billion is $150 million, $172 million, whatever.
Sorry, yeah.
Right off the bat is what we're giving away in that bond deal. $170 million to the mayor's friends, allies, pastors, whomever, so that nobody can ask questions. Everyone can be happy that they're living high off the hog. And John Q. taxpayer is going to have to pay for it for the next 30 years. That $830 million that you asked me about, that's only meant to cover 2 years worth of spending for 30 years worth of debt.
That just, I mean, I don't know how the alderman that did vote for that for the 26th, and I know it posts, everybody posted, like, all the 26 that voted for it.
Well, just think about your own home. Would you take out a 30-year loan to replace your ceiling fan that you know is going to break in a couple years?
No, right. That's a great analogy. No.
I mean, even the roads that we resurfaced in the neighborhoods, that's done on borrowed money. And the roads we know only last 10 years in the city of Chicago because of weather.
Right.
But we're borrowing. We will have borrowed to resurface that road 3 times at 30-year loans by the time we get done paying off that first loan. And right now, the other unfortunate thing is that, and most people don't realize that this is also, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because when you go back to that $40 billion that I was talking about, we are slowly becoming a debt service provider, not a city service provider, a debt service, because between pensions and general debt, those bonds, 43-46% of what we spend every year is specifically just for that.
That sounds sustainable.
You are literally on the cusp of spending more on debt than you are on picking up garbage, cutting trees, killing rats, filling potholes, all that other stuff. And at some point, when that tips, then the city of Chicago is going to be in a world of shit.
And we're going to be Detroit.
And you are literally spitting distance from that line right now.
And that's what I equate it to, where we're after signing this last $830 million, I'm just like, we're becoming Detroit. We will be Detroit because people are going to move out. People are going to leave the city of Chicago and Cook County altogether, period. Well,
and just think about, you know, people use that Detroit analogy all the time, and it's a little bit of a misnomer, but the visualization is the same. Detroit had a singular economy, and it died when...
Yeah, the auto industry, yeah.
But we saw what happened.
Yeah.
We have a multifaceted economy, and we're still heading down this, heading to the same end goal. Mm-hmm. So we are literally killing everything in the city of Chicago, both by overtaxing, overregulating, underperforming, as well as prohibiting many of the things that we know survive and sustain this city for a generation. Our downtown district, dead. Conventions, tourism, dead. Manufacturing, dead. Restaurants, dead.
And we're doubling up on taxes on people not coming here and not doing. And the ones that are here, I mean, alcohol tax just went up. Everything.
I mean, you need more than just the money that's here to sustain the city that we've built over decades.
Right.
And I think now all of that is finally starting to come to the forefront in many people's eyes as they try to see, why are we turning into what we're turning into? Where have we gone wrong? And people are starting to finally wake up, finally starting to share their stories and broadcast their concerns in a very real way. Because I think what has allowed all of this to happen for so long is that Chicago has thrived in spite of its politicians. You could have some really fucked up people in office and still Chicago would survive.
And we have. Yeah.
And then it finally tipped.
Yeah.
And now people want to know, what can we do to get back on track? Because now all of those bad political decisions are coming home to roost. And there's still, and let's be clear, there are still plenty of bad decisions that this mayor has in the hopper waiting to unleash on the city of Chicago.
Oh, really?
I mean, when we look at the housing, I mean, how many people in the city of Chicago have a two flat or a three flat that they bought, that they live in and then try to rent to try and pay, help pay off the mortgage or create some generational wealth?
Oh, that's huge. I mean,
that's like the basis of like 2/3 of the city of Chicago.
And generational wealth and how to become wealthy then, and have something down
and
the road.
And now the mayor and his socialist allies want to take all that away from Chicagoans and say that if you rent to someone, that they have just as much a right to make decisions for your property as you, the owner.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And if you want to sell, you have to offer it to the tenant first before you take it to market.
I did see that. I saw that part.
Or if you're in a up and coming neighborhood, that you shouldn't be allowed to convert your home in from a multi-unit into a single unit in like Wicker Park because you're taking away housing for people, and you should not be able to capitalize on and having stayed in a neighborhood that has transitioned from crap to awesomeness because it's not right for other people who want to live there. All kinds of craziness. And that's just in housing. That's before we get to business. That's before we get to public safety, which we have really not even touched on. That's a whole other segment we could do.
Yeah, I would love to have you back, because I know we've been going for a little bit, and I definitely want to be able to have you back, and you're more than welcome to come back, and we can talk about all kinds of stuff, because I'm watching, and I'm paying attention more so than I ever have, and I know I'm going to have a ton of questions. And you seem more on the middle of the road, that you're willing to talk and you're willing to call out bullshit. And I love watching what you do on X. So I appreciate that very much. And I'm trying to see if I can follow other people, but there's nobody as outspoken as you are, at least from the aldermanic standpoint. I think the only other person that I've seen that's kind of out there is Cook County Commissioner Sean Morrison, but he's a Republican. So,
well, we've got some good folks that stand up, and you know, I look at it like this. I wasn't raised to be a liar. And I will always call it out for what it is, however it is. And I've told the mayor now, the mayor then, and the mayor before, if you're doing right by my neighborhoods, I'm with you 100%. If you're not, I'll be against you 100%.
Yeah.
It's you pick your poison, but I'm telling you right now, this is how it's going to be. Support our community, support our city. I'm all yours.
Yeah.
Sadly, we've seen three mayors go from good to worse.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to rate them, but I was like, now that you did it anyway.
No, I would gladly say, you know what? People might not have liked Rahm Emanuel, but that's because they didn't know how to talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, people would come at him with the warm and fuzzy bullshit, and that was not Rahm. Rahm was very much a, what's our return on investment? What do we need to make it happen? What do we need to do? What can we get? How's it going to help us? Blah, blah, blah. Have that conversation with him. You're as right as rain. Lori Lightfoot couldn't talk to her because she knew everything. Brennan Johnson, all he wants to do is...
talk CTU.
No.
Teachers.
No, no, no.
I mean, or racism.
Nope. Oh. Actually, he talks about nothing. He'll sit there and talk about how beautiful the cloud is, and you'll never have a real conversation about anything else because it doesn't connect with what he wants to do. But I think that, you know, these kind of opportunities to highlight and discuss and share and have an unvarnished, unfiltered conversation is what people want to see. I think they're fed up with, like we said earlier, legacy media, emerging media, podcasts, things of that nature tend to get more attention, more views because it's more authentic. And to be fair, not one prepared question for me. So this is 100% on
everything,
the fly.
This is 100% on the fly. There's no questions. And everything that is from me following up on my own, by memory and our conversation, which has been awesome.
And thank God I pay attention in city council so I could tell what all the numbers are.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, look forward. Thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for coming on. And I hope to see you again soon.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Folks, as you know, all facts, no fluff. Appreciate you watching. Take care.